You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at F&B Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. And Wayne, I was just wondering whether, you know, the wars that are going on, I mean, it's not just Ukraine and Russia. It's not just Israel versus Hezbollah and Hamas. There's also other conflicts going on and people getting drawn into this sort of thing. And once the geopolitics and the wars and the politics itself, for example, the US election, once that's all out the way, will markets become less choppy? Because I'm getting the sense that they're becoming quite choppy and volatile. But you, having been in the business for decades, will know that eventually things just smooth themselves out.
Yeah, look, I must say, I don't think the markets are overly volatile at the moment. I think there's normal amount of volatility. There's just uncertainty in it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe the global conflicts and that have been escalated. I mean, it's not often you get a country invasion like the Russia thing.
Mm.
I mean, the Middle East, unfortunately, may have escalated quite dramatically, but that's not new news. You know, that's been around, I don't know how long. Since 1948, essentially.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Obviously, it's badly enough, it's escalated. You know, so unfortunately, as I said, it's escalated now. But that's not new news. And I mean, there's regional conflicts going on all over the world. You know, and unfortunately, this does happen, and it's part of markets. And you know, I once did a quite an intensive study as to big world events and what effect they had on the market.
And?
So it was things like when the Cuban Missile Crisis and President Kennedy's assassination and the Vietnam War. So I excluded the two world wars because that was, you know, quite something.
Mm.
But, and the conclusion I came to is that markets may have reacted initially, but unless they were expensive, they quickly recovered. So if they were expensive, then sometimes they took a pounding on that event. And my sort of rationale was that this was just the trigger that made markets fall. The reason why they fell was they were expensive. So in other words, you've got to watch out for global conflicts, regional conflicts, politics, assassinations, et cetera, in an environment where markets are very expensive, because that just might give you the trigger to make them fall. But if they're reasonably valued or even expensive, I mean, I'm not talking ridiculously expensive, but even expensive, if something happens, it'll only have a shorter term effect on the market. So now you can look at the US markets and that you can argue they're expensive, but they're nowhere near the valuations they were when we had true bear markets. I mean, they're a long way off these sort of very lofty valuations. Our market, you can barely make an argument that it's even expensive. You can actually make quite a good argument that it's reasonably valued too cheap. So if there is some escalation or some trigger event, I don't think it's going to spark a prolonged bear market. It may give you a short term, and I mean, short term could be months. You know, it may give you a shorter term downward reaction as a result of a particular event. But I don't think, you know, unless a new world war breaks out or we use nuclear weapons, you know, I don't think it's going to give you a prolonged bear market.
Okay, so we've got reasonably fairly priced markets, which are not vulnerable to a particular event. For example, if a small nuclear warhead is used against Ukraine or against Russia or something like that.
No, I think that might that may look ultimately,
mm-hmm.
a political event or a war has got to lead to an economic event, have a prolonged effect on the market, unless the market's expensive and looking for a reason to fall. So if we have a nuclear attack here, I think there's deep, deep trouble in the world's economy, because people, I mean, it would be catastrophic, and I don't think anyone would even contemplate that. I don't think even the most crazy leader in the world would, I don't even think the North Korean leader would actually contemplate a nuclear weapon.
Well,
because
the
repercussions and the consequences. Mm-hmm. Look, I suppose you don't know, but that could easily lead to an economic event, a negative economic event, which will then cause the markets to fall.
Okay, well, that's not going to happen. Of course, we know that. So once all this is out the way, the geopolitics, the wars have been factored in. I mean, people don't even talk about the Russia-Ukraine war anymore.
No.
You get the occasional meeting when Zelensky goes to Europe and tries to raise some more money, all that sort of thing. But there's fatigue. Yeah, there is war fatigue in that sense. 40 to 45,000 people being killed in Gaza and Lebanon, that is something that is ongoing and will continue to be there. But again, it's not affecting anybody. It's not as if they produce oil in Gaza or anything like that. And I know it sounds callous to say that sort of thing, but that is the truth.
It's not an economic event.
Mm. No, it's not. So Wayne, the S&P 500 is doing okay. I think it's going to be choppy for the next 13, 14 days because that's when the US election is. We've got earnings season as well at the moment. And South Africa seems to be doing well. I like that CPI figure today, that consumer price inflation figure, below 4%. Very, very good news, I think.
Yeah, that is good news. But you must remember, despite what the official trading range is that's given to our Reserve Bank, the Reserve Bank's goal, which is not official, but it is the reality, it is their goal,
yes,
is inflation below 4.5. Eh?
Yeah.
So I don't think this number coming in below 4.5 will accelerate their rate cuts. I don't think we're going to get 50 basis points just because it's below the halfway mark.
Mm.
I think it's exactly where the Reserve Bank wants it to be. And, you know, it's had a huge boost downwards, huge push downwards by the big fall in price of petrol at the pumps here because of the weak oil price, obviously, but mainly because of the strong rand. You know, the pump prices, fuel prices in South Africa have come down quite significantly. And of course, that's an immediate effect on inflation. You know, it's not a prolonged effect, it's an immediate effect.
Yeah, what was that figure? I'm just getting it up here from a major bank in Johannesburg, exactly what the figure was. CPI update, inflation drops to below 4% year on year.
So it's 3.8, Joe.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's pretty good. I mean, you've got a range of between 3 and 6%. So 4.5% is the median, and we're now at 3.8%. Yeah. Now, there's two things you can say there. You can say, well, that's really good because it means interest rates will continue to be cut in a measured way because the South African Reserve Bank is very measured in the way it does things. But on the other hand, it could say people are not buying stuff. And that's the reason why, because there's a lack of demand in the economy. Where do you stand?
That's exactly what the Reserve Bank wanted, because the increased interest rate was to push down demand in the economy.
Mm.
So they've achieved their goal. But just as a sort of maybe a longer-term comment about inflation and everything, you know, the sort of rule of thumb on the rand was the rand should fall by 7% a year over long-time periods. Okay, the rand will always be volatile, so let's put that aside.
Mm-hmm.
But the rand should, over long-time periods, fall by 7% a year, because roughly speaking, that's our inflation differential between the U.S. and ourselves. That has narrowed considerably. You know, in fact, in the last 2 years, the U.S. has had higher inflation than South Africa. And right now, call it equal. More or less equal. So if that theory still holds into the future, we should expect less structural weakness in the rand. I'm not saying the rand's going to strengthen perpetually, but it's always going to be volatile. It's always going to overshoot on the top and bottom by 30%. But in theory, the fair value for the rand going forward should actually depreciate. I'm talking 10-year, 20-year stories, should actually depreciate by less than what it has over the previous 20 or 30 or 40 years, because simply that inflation differential, it's not non-existent, but it is a fraction of what it used to be. And you know, so I mean, I don't know whether that theory will hold, but if it does, because it means it's held through apartheid, it's held through the new South Africa, it's held through good times, bad times, it's held. You know, if that continues to hold, then You know, there should be less structural weakness on the rand going forward, and I hope that is the case.
Yeah, well, I hope so too, but it doesn't last for very long. Rand strength or relative rand strength could be a year to 18 months or something, but eventually it goes on its merry way again. And the only way that the South African rand will ever be a strong currency is if economic growth and political stability become entrenched in South Africa, and then people say, actually, this is a place we should be investing in. And if they invest, they have to buy the rand.
All I'm saying is that maybe that figure isn't 7 anymore. Maybe it's 3 or 4.
Hmm.
And over long time periods, you know, 3 or 4% lower depreciation per annum actually adds up.
Yeah, it really does. Wayne, I was speaking to somebody today about a commodity conference that this person went to in Denver, Colorado. And it was a single commodity conference, and it was all to do with gold. And he said to me that last year he went, there were 1,500 delegates. Now there was only 900. Yeah. And I said, well, that's really strange because the gold price is an all-time record high of $2,725, and that's down $20 on the day. It's gone through the roof. Do you find that gold is telling us something? Inflation's falling. The dollar's relatively stable, but I suppose it's expected to weaken with interest rates from the US Federal Reserve coming down. Do you think that gold is telling us something? Because I asked him, what is the mood there? And he said, it's very good. It's the central banks have been loading up with gold.
Central banks have been buying. Look, when the price goes up, there's always good reasons why it goes up, because if there weren't good reasons why it's going up, it wouldn't be going up.
Good point, yeah.
And I mean, people must listen very carefully to that statement, because that's one of the fundamental tenets of the market. If something's going up, A, it's very easy to find all the good reasons as to why it's going up. Will those reasons stay in place or not? That's debatable. Same as when something falls. You don't have to scratch for bad news. Eh? you don't have to scratch for bad news. It's you are swamped by bad news when something goes wrong somewhere.
Hmm.
So I've given up on gold. I've never been a gold bull, and gold is a funny thing. If you grew up in investments in South Africa in the 70s and the early 80s to mid 80s, you were a gold bull, because that's the only thing that saved your investment returns were gold shares. Then if you grew up after we tamed inflation and things looked a bit better, then you're a gold bear like me. I'm just not a gold investor at all. I don't think I've ever bought a gold share. So I'm the wrong person to talk to. But what I have seen about gold recently is that gold goes up during high inflation. Gold goes up during low inflation. Gold goes up in rising interest rate. Gold goes up in falling interest rates. Gold just seems to go up, which worries me, because I don't know if there's a reason why it's going up. It goes up in political uncertainty. It goes up in the war. It goes up in stable conditions. You know, it's just been going up the last 2 years.
I think it's because people want to diversify out of the US dollar, and it's all to do with Russia.
Possible, but look, there's not enough gold to really diversify. Look at the value of gold, when you look at the value of gold to financial assets, it is so minuscule. I mean, it is literally, virtually non-existent in relation to financial assets. So now, if people want to put 3% of their portfolio as a diversification into gold...
They could buy the whole supply.
The price will be $20,000.
Yeah, you're quite right.
Per ounce.
And also the equities.
You know, so
you look at the equities. I mean, the amount of gold equities compared to Nvidia or Amazon or whatever, it's minuscule.
You can chat to that other old bullet next time you talk to him. When he grew up in South Africa in investments, gold was 45% of the market cap.
Yeah. I shall speak to Shapiro.
But he's not a gold bull. Even though he grew up during the gold boom years, he's not actually a massive gold bull.
You know why, don't you?
Gold runs up.
You know why? Because the first order his father gave him when he was a rookie on the JSE Secure, or the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, that used to be called, in Diagonal Street or wherever it was, he got this order and he messed it up. So he's got this psychological barrier with gold. It's like you and stews, because your mother didn't make good stews. You can't eat a stew anymore. It's David Shapiro cannot invest in gold.
I agree with you, Ned. Mm. No, but look, when Shapiro did his first order, Did they write it down on the piece of paper and then send it with a messenger? Because did they have telephones and that sort of thing?
No, I think they had pigeons in those days.
They had pigeons, yeah.
Mm. So, but we'll speak to him about that because we're going to do a show with him next week for various reasons, which need not detain us now. But yeah. He can tell us about the pigeons then. But yeah, anyway, what I was trying to say is gold price is telling you something. If central banks are buying gold, they're nervous about something. They're nervous about the financial system. They're nervous about geopolitics. They're nervous about wars. Because when a central bank buys gold, it doesn't say, I'm going to buy it this week, and if I've made $100 an ounce, I'm going to sell it the next week. They don't do that. They hold it.
I can remember, but let me just counter that. I can remember the days when gold was absolutely collapsing around your ears. The central bankers were selling.
Gordon Brown.
So they could very well be buying at the top here. They don't know any more about the future than what you and I know. I just know that every 5 years, gold does the almighty run. It knocks the socks off every other investment on the face of the earth. And then it collapses around your ears. Just when things can't get any better, they tend not to get any better.
Okay. Well, anyway, you're not a gold bull. You're not a gold investor. You've never bought a gold share. You've made that clear. David Shapiro is exactly the same. But someone's making money out of it.
Old Shapiro might still have the old Kruger Rand there that he rubs between his fingers at night under his pillow. You never know. He grew up in investments in the 70s. Okay. He might still have the old Kruger Rand there that he strokes and fondles.
Okay, I don't really want to know about him going to bed and stroking and fondling, quite honestly.
It's a Kruger Rand.
See. Okay. Mm. Talking about resources, which we are, in the form of gold. Not a great day on the JSE today. It's not the close yet, but 1.7% down for the resources index. When are these things going to get going, Wayne?
Well, who knows? I mean, I literally don't know, but I still stick. Maybe I'm wrong. Obviously, time will tell. Mm. I still stick to the thing is we're coming up for a resource cycle. Look, the gold, the resource index has run hard, but only the gold share.
Okay, well, let's hope it gets itself together and it's a synchronicity. Everything goes up. Iron ore, gold, lithium, the whole lot goes. Wayne, let's talk a little bit about food in the last couple of minutes. Have you ever heard of something called Bubble and Squeak?
Yes, I've got a little story about Bubble and Squeak.
Well, let me tell you mine before you tell me yours. Yeah. Because tonight what I'm doing, I've got a couple of potatoes, very delicious potatoes. They're called Nicola potatoes, and they're good for all different types of, they're good for roasting and frying and everything. I'm going to boil them and mash them, and I'm going to add a few vegetables, peas and bits of stuff that I've got in the fridge. And I'm going to put it all together, flatten it out a bit in a pan, a buttered pan, and fry it very, very on a very hot heat so it gets a sort of a crust on both sides. So that'll be my Bubble and Squeak. Then I've got a fennel and pork sausage waiting for me. And
ooh,
I also make...
Sounds.
Oh, really? I'll tell you what. This butcher makes a mean sausage. And on the side, I'm going to have my famous beef onion gravy with the secret ingredient, which isn't good. So secret anymore, the spoonful of Bovril, on the side. So I've got the sausage, the Bubble and Squeak, the delicious, thick onion, beefy gravy, and that's my evening. I shall sit down and watch football, which you don't like, but I do, and I've got the perfect evening ahead of me. What about you? What's your Bubble and Squeak story?
Fantastic. Mm. Look, just very quickly, the world's biggest loves a pork banger. We actually had that for dinner last night with gravy and onions, and it was delicious. But my parents and their parents still longed after the old, the home country. They still had some affiliation to the home country.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I have absolutely no affiliation whatsoever. But be that as it may, when we went overseas in 1968 by boat, actually, we arrived.
What was the name of the boat? The Windsor Castle?
We went in the winter, came back on the Pendennis Castle.
Oh, there you go.
And we got off the boat, we went through customs, and we came out into the Portsmouth Harbour. And the first thing my parents did was go to a local fish shop Mm-hmm. And they ordered cockles and mussels. Do you know that song?
And cockles and mussels and alive, something. Teach them. Yeah, I know that one.
Alive, ho.
That's the one.
Yeah, I sang it at junior school, pre-primary school. And so then my parents, they ran to the, they had to get cockles and mussels, and they had to get bubble and squeak.
Huh.
And I can remember as an eight-year-old youngster, I'd never heard of this. I mean, you didn't see seafood in Kimberley in the 1960s. All you saw, only fish on the menu there was a barbel caught in the Vaal River, which was terrible. anyway, so they get this bubble and squeak and this cockles and mussels, and they said, would you like to try some? Of course, yeah, I'm going to try it. I mean, as I said, I was singing the song in pre-primary, and my parents were talking about cockles and mussels and bubble and squeak. And I must say, as an eight-year-old, it was absolutely awful.
I know. That's an acquired taste, really.
It was awful.
The bubble and squeak, not so much, Wayne, because
bubble and squeak wasn't revolting, but I must say the cockles and mussels were absolute. I eat mussels nowadays. I'm not even sure what a cockle is.
It's a crustacean of some. It's a shellfish of some description, yeah. But it's very nice. I like all that sort of stuff. But bubble and squeak is a Boxing Day tradition in the UK because your Christmas dinner, your Christmas lunch or dinner. You over cater. You've got too many potatoes, too many sprouts, too many carrots, all that sort of thing. So what my mother used to do, put it all together and mash it all up and then fry it. And that was called bubble and squeak. And the next time you meet a Greek person, test that person out and say, call him or her a bubble, because that's the Cockney rhyming slang for a Greek person, a bubble and squeak. And see what they say.
I got you on that one. It's like a... Your china plate.
Exactly, my mate. Yeah, my china.
As your mate, and then your strife and what's it? Trouble and strife.
Trouble and strife is your wife, and I know today you've told me confidentially you've been for a haircut, and hair is called Barnet Fair. So I'm going to get my Barnet cut.
I didn't know that one.
Yeah, Barnet Fair.
I didn't know that.
I'm going to get my Barnet cut, and when you go,
and what was the church? What was the church's name that you were a Cockney if you grew up and could hear their bells ringing?
Oh, yeah, the sound of Bow Bells, yes.
Bells, that's it, yeah.
That's the one, yeah. My father
then
was
you were
a Cockney. Exactly. I'm a Cockney. I'm a son of a Cockney. Anyway, we're digressing. Wayne, thank you very much for your time. I hope your haircut pleases the missus. And we'll speak again next week. That was Wayne McCurry, Portfolio Manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. And that was Wayne on Wednesday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.